Okay, thank you very much, members, and thanks for being here on time. I'm going to call the Transportation and Transit Policy and Oversight Division Committee to order for one last time here. Happy St. Patrick's Day. We have just three bills today, and we're going to take Representative Cornish's first. I don't see Representative Fortman here yet. And so what we're going to do, members, is take testimony, and then I guess we'll just have to vote once we have a quorum. So, but there's nothing that would preclude you, Representative Cornish, from presenting your bill. Welcome to our committee, and I will move that House File 3172 be recommended to pass and go directly to the General Register.
Mr. Chairman,
welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The first thing I'd have to ask Council for some advice. The bill came amended with a delete all from the Education Committee here, and I have another amendment that was suggested by MnDOT, but I don't know if it matches up with the engrossment or the original bill, and so I was wondering if hopefully there's a way to make it work, the A1 amendment that you have in your packet.
Okay. Mr. Burris, could you give us some advice on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, I would suggest if you want to move the A1 amendment to just change that to be a delete everything amendment instead of a page and line amendment, and that would replace all of the existing language in the bill. And then we can convey that to the revisor's office what the committee's intent is. On 1.2 of the A1 amendment, basically strike that, delete that entire line and replace it with delete everything after the enacting clause and insert. That would make it a delete all amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I need somebody to move my amendment as stated there by Mr. Burris.
Hey, Mr. Burris, do we have a coding? I'm sorry. Okay. I will move the A1 amendment then, Representative Cornish. Is there any discussion?
On the bill?
Mr. Chair, are you moving the A1 amendment as amended?
Yes.
Okay.
So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. And now we're, I guess, at the point where you have the bill in the shape you'd like to present it in, Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair and members, what we have here in just plain layman's language is a conflict in statute. A small school district within my district would like to advertise on the inside of their ball field by their school not to extend above the fence and be on the inside of the fence meant for spectators only. And there is a state statute that allows them to contract with advertisers, but there's also a conflicting statute that talks about the close proximity of a highway. After checking with a number of people, we think we've found a solution for it. It was advised by MnDOT that would amend the existing statute that talks about the proximity from the highway, which is 83. And you can see where it amends the statute on the A1 amendment on what I have as line 1.11, where it allows within 100 feet of a church or school without the consent of the church or school. And if you'd like testimony, there is somebody from MnDOT here to give clarification what I'm at. But the school just wants to take in some money from advertising. Like I say, it wouldn't be intended for anybody on the highway. It would be inside of the ball field and not extending above the fence. So it would be primarily visible only from the field. It would be so that they could be excluded from the statute with this language. And this would be a statewide fix and not just for the school as the other statute was.
Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cornish, how does the A1 amendment address the issue of the proximity to the highway?
Could I get the person from MnDOT to join me here and maybe give you some background to the existing statute and why it's needed to fix it?
Hi, my name
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. Thank you.
My name is Scott Robinson. I'm the state outdoor advertising coordinator for MnDOT.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Some background on this. There is a school in St. Clair, Minnesota that wanted to have advertising on their ball fields. And normally, if advertising is within visual distance of a state or federal highway, we have to permit the advertising device. However, Minnesota Law 17308 prohibits any sort of advertising device within 100 feet of a church or school. So their zoning was proper. They could have a permit if they wanted, except for this clause in 17308.
So, Mr. Chair, just for clarification, the issue really wasn't the highway, because the advertising wasn't going to be visible from the highway. The issue was the proximity to the school. Is that correct?
Well, both of that is correct. It was the visibility from the highway and proximity to the school.
And, Mr. Chair, just to clarify, so, in other words, MnDOT could still veto signs within 100 feet of a school or church property if they didn't meet the criteria of for the rest
of... That is correct.
Okay. And then I just have a question. I don't know if Representative Cornish has the answer to this, but if the school enacts a policy that allows signs within their ball field under free speech or whatever, do they have to take all comers? In other words, can they limit who can purchase advertising on their property? I mean, I'm assuming they don't want, like, girly bars or some of that kind of advertising at a ball field. So are there free speech issues involved with this as well?
No, the school would have discretion to put up whatever they want. We would not have any involvement with regulating the content.
Well, Mr. Chair, I understand that, but I'm just asking from a broader policy perspective. I mean, I don't know why this law was put into effect with the 100 feet, but I mean, I'm just curious if you know, are there any issues about if schools allow this, do they have the ability to limit what types of businesses are allowed on these signs?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, the question was asked in the last committee. I believe the superintendent from this school said that each school had to have a policy. And while that specific question wasn't asked about free speech, there was a he said there was a policy, and they were given discretion as to what permit, what they could permit and not permit. As far as the free speech specific, I don't know, but the superintendent did say that the school had a policy and a plan, and he said that they retained the authority to reject advertising.
Thank you.
Representative Rudolph.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Cornish, so you haven't been informed if political advertising will be permitted?
No, I haven't been informed of that. And, Mr. Chair, just for the background for the committee, the bill did go through both the Education and the Transportation Committee in the Senate with no opposition and is awaiting floor action. And just ask for your support.
Representative Portman, did you have a question?
Yeah, I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just think Representative Holberg raises a pretty significant point of why this was in the statutes in the first place, and I think that she's right. If they take one kind of ad, they have to take another. Under the First Amendment, the school would have to take things that they might not agree with. And I wondered why we adopted the amendment, given that the language of the original bill said notwithstanding other law to the contrary, and then it limited it to this situation. And the amendment, what it does is it broadens it out so that maybe my school district has to let the people who are opposed to abortion put up a sign, and the people who are in, you know what I mean? This could open some complicated circumstances up for our schools that they might not really want to have.
Representative Rudolph? Well, actually, maybe to the author, and then I'll call on Representative Riddle. Did you have a response, either Mr. Robinson or Representative Cornish?
Well, the way it's been revised, it really leaves the choice up to the church and school whether they want to do this at all. We're just making an opening. If they should decide to do it, they can do it under statute.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hortman.
But the problem is, if your school district... the First Amendment says if you let Representative Mary Liz Holberg buy a sign and put it on your field, And then the Nazis come and ask, and they want to put a sign on your field. You have to let them, too, under the First Amendment. If it's a public school, it's a government, you know, you can control time, place, and manner, but not content. So you can't say some things are okay and some things aren't okay. You can't say the gas station's okay, but the strip club's not okay. And so I think that when we put the amendment on, we're putting schools in a bad spot because, for example, my school would have a Linda's Trophies ad and a David Letterman Sports ad and a Champlin Athletic ad. But if some nefarious business, or from my perspective, adult bookstore in the community wanted to place an ad, they would be stuck. They would have to say yes, or they would get sued and they would lose.
Well, Mr. Chair, the best way I can answer that is if there wasn't a highway or anything else involved here, the school would be faced with the same problem. The only reason why we're here is the proximity of the highway. In other words, if there was an inland school that weren't around any things, they would still have to make that choice anyway. Or if they put out their album for the year and take advertising or anything, it would be the same as a fence. The only thing that complicates this statute is that why we're here is the ball field in proximity to the highway. If it was further back in, I think they would face all those Second Amendment conflicts also. So however they deal with that now, far inland would be the way they deal with this, I would imagine.
Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if these testifiers can speak to this, but the question is, if the issue is also the proximity of the advertisement to the highway. It's my understanding that in some cases, state violations of federal transportation requirements may place a state's federal highway aid in jeopardy. Can you tell me if that's true, and how will we determine if that state aid will be in jeopardy because of the placement of the signs?
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair and members, we had that question asked, and I believe MnDOT came back with an answer that it wasn't in violation of the conformity rules, but I'll let him answer for himself.
No, that would not apply in this case because the 100-foot setback we're trying to amend is a state law. It's not a federal law. Federal law basically puts down the rules for spacing and size and zoning. So we're not violating any federal law with this, so no funding would be in jeopardy.
Okay, how about Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we're making a bigger deal out of this than it is. I mean, ballparks all over Minnesota have advertising inside their fences. The town ball fields, high school fields, most everywhere. If you go to Optimist Park in Litchfield, in left field, you'll see Representative Erdahl sign. I'm asking to be switched to right field for next year, but it's there.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Representative Holbert.
I'm really confused now because I thought we clarified that the reason we were doing this was not the proximity to the highway, but rather this statute that prohibited signs within 100 feet of a school or church. So if somebody can clarify why we're doing this, that would be helpful.
If a sign has got proximity to the highway within 660 feet, by federal law and state statute, we have to issue a permit for it if it's on the state or federal highway.
And, Mr. Chair, from the testimony, you stated that you were able to issue a permit for this, but for the 100-foot prohibition. Is that correct? So the issue we're dealing with right here really is not having anything to do with the highway proximity, but rather the state statute prohibiting within 100 feet of a church or school.
Yes.
And okay.
If we gave the church and school the option to waive that, we could grant them a permit for their signs.
Is there any further discussion? Does that clarify things, Representative Holbrook, for you? Or?
Well, Mr. Chair, I understand what they're trying to do. I think there's may be some unintended consequences here, and I'm not going to stop the bill, or try and kill the bill today or whatever, but I am really curious about the free speech element to this and to what degree schools are allowed to limit on their property. The other issue, too, is, churches have, they'll still have, the consent, so, that's okay, but you know, I mean, I can think of certain signs that churches aren't going to want 100 feet from their door either.
Yeah. Representative Portman.
Mr. Chair, I just would suggest to Representative Cornish, if we peeled off the amendment, I mean, I think the bill is fine as it is, and because on line 1.8 it says notwithstanding other law to the contrary. So it doesn't seem like we have to amend 17308 to allow this sign to go up in this situation.
Mr. Chair and members, I would be fine with that, I guess, and then in working out the different, it'll be slightly different from the Senate version, and in working out the what seems to be some gray area here in conference, if that would be okay.
Mr. Chair, I didn't vote on either side of the amendment, so I move reconsideration of the A1 amendment.
Okay, Representative Hortman moves reconsideration of the A1 amendment. Representative Hortman, did you want to
just to vote discussion? To reconsider?
Yes.
And then we have the discussion on the amendment.
Okay. All in favor of reconsidering the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Hortman.
I don't know if anybody wants to offer it again, but I would advise people to vote against it because I think the language that Representative Cornish has on the existing House File 3172 does what he needs to do and doesn't cause any unintended consequences.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Holbert.
Representative Cornish, are you okay with that?
With
going back to your original bill, and
I'm fine with that, and okay. Working out the Mr. Chair and members and the differences in conference, along with input from MnDOT, so we don't run into any conflict with conformity or anything else. I appreciate it.
So, members, so as a result of the Hortman motion, we now have before us again the original A1 amendment. So,
only if somebody wants to offer it.
If someone wants to offer it, but it doesn't sound like we have that. I will not reoffer that. So we're back, members, to the original bill, House File 3172. Does everyone have a copy of that? It's the second engrossment, first engrossment, coded H3172CR1. Just want to make sure everyone has before them what we're talking about. Well, I'll ask for discussion then to the bill. Is there discussion? Okay. Then I will renew my motion that House File 3172 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. So thank you, members. I'm glad we stuck to our jurisdiction here rather than getting into the civil law aspect of this.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Appreciate your patience, Representative Cornish. So we have two Hortman bills. The first one is House File 3080, and I see that we have a delete everything amendment. Do you want to move that, Representative Hortman?
I would. That will get it into the shape Mr. Burris recommends.
Okay. Mr. Burris. All right. Mr. Burris is our authority here. So I'll then just move the DE1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. This is the bill as the author would like it presented to us.
Representative Hortman, would you like to explain the bill, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, you may recall we did a child restraint bill last year that changed the state law on passenger restraints for children. And the school bus associations were under the impression they were exempt from the law. And the way that the Department of Public Safety has interpreted the law, they are not. And so what this bill does is it just makes the law as people thought it was when we passed it. And Brad Lundell is here to speak in favor of the bill.
Welcome, Mr. Lundell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell here today on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation. I want to thank Representative Hortman for passing this bill. We certainly understand the need for the expanded child restraint system and that the legislature passed last year. As she said, we thought we were exempt from the bill. There was a DPS interpretation that we were not. I would like to say that I'm not going to sit up here. We were disagreed with what DPS said, but given the reading of the bill, grounds did exist for DPS to make the interpretation that they did, necessitating this bill. The bill is supported by the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation, the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association, Minnesota School Boards Association, the Minnesota Administrators of Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. A couple of things that I wanted to mention, though, is that cars and vans will still be covered. So if you see that if it's not built to a bus crash standard, all those vehicles will be using the will be subject to the expanded use of the child restraint systems. IEPs will be followed even in a school bus if an individual education plan under special education requires the use of the expanded booster seat. That will be followed. And also, I've talked to some districts that even with this bill and the permissive language in it to not use the child restraint, some districts will still be using expanded child restraint systems. It's just going to vary from district to district. But again, I want to thank the committee and thank Representative Horton for coming forward with this bill, and would certainly stand for any questions.
All right, members, are there any questions for either Representative Horton or Mr. Lundell? Any comments from anyone sitting in the audience? All right, hearing no further discussion of this bill, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed?
Okay, members, I'm sorry. Thank you. This was sent to the General Register, I believe, but...
Yes.
Okay, we made that motion earlier.
No.
Okay, well, members, then we need to... I'm sorry. So all those in favor of House File 3080 as amended to be sent to the General Register, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. Thank you, Representative Swills. I'm sorry, I had to step out for a second.
That's quite all right.
Okay, we have a final bill, House File 1191, Representative Horton. Again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill was heard last year. The acronym for this bill is RALF. It's a Right-of-Way Acquisition Loan Funds. It's about the Metropolitan Council acquiring property in advance of a transportation project. And under current law, they can only buy the property ahead of time if the owner is in a hardship situation. But sometimes it makes sense to buy property when the market is low, because you know you're going to do a transportation project, you just might not have all your funding yet. And this would give Metropolitan Council the authority to make land purchases when the market conditions are right. It passed last year, it was folded into the omnibus transportation policy bill, and because we never know what happens with omnibus policy bills, I would like to have it travel by itself to the General Register.
Okay. Representative Horton, I think that that is a wise decision. I think that Representative Holberg also made that determination. So we will move it on one of her bills. So we will move it that direction. Thank you.
That's it.
Okay. Is there discussion to the bill? We've heard this, I think, a couple of times already. So, all right. Hearing none, all those in favor of House File 1191 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Now, members, I am going to give Representative Bly an opportunity to present a new idea that he has without taking a vote. This will be for informational purposes only. We have some time today, and I've asked him to be brief. As you know, he has been very active in a corridor in his district and asked for some committee time. And we're not going to reconsider his bill because no one has seen his new idea yet. So we want to be able to have him present it and have some discussion because this issue is not going away. I have voted a couple times with Representative Bly on this, but rather than reconsider a bill we haven't seen, procedurally, I think it's more appropriate that we do this for informational purposes. So, Representative Bly, do you want to, we have something before us that's a little bit different than we've seen before related to the Dan Patch Corridor. So, With that, we'll just do this for informational purposes only.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Hornstein, and thank you, members. In my community, the topic of commuter rail or commuter transit is a very serious point of discussion and something that I get constantly asked about and urged to do something about. And I know that we've had, it's been a controversial issue whether or not the Dan Patch commuter rail line would be open or prohibited. There is currently a prohibition against talking about it. My sense is that there was a study done, and we would like to be able to look at that study and use that to perhaps consider other options or perhaps use part of the line, but all of that seems prohibited to us under the current ban. And so what I'm attempting to do in this amendment is to give comfort to those who have great fear about the line going through and trying to give an opportunity for my community to be a part of the conversation that you hear all over the state about commuter rail and transit. And so essentially what it would do is leave in place the prohibitions except for study and planning. And my purpose in doing that is to give my community the opportunity to be a part of that conversation about commuter rail as other communities have that option. I think it seems unreasonable and unfair to members of my community that they can't even talk about these various options.
And thank you, Representative Blatt. And I guess just for the committee's information, how is what you've passed out here, which is an A10-2339 amendment, which may be in bill form next year, maybe it'll come back some other way this year, I don't know. But how is this different than what you've done previously?
Okay, I should have started there, I'm sorry. In previous attempts, what I have introduced is just a repealer that would repeal the prohibition and would have allowed design, planning, and full consideration of the line to move forward if there was a desire to do that. What this does is just say, essentially, no, it can only be a topic of discussion about, and in my mind, the prohibition prevents us from really talking about that prior study and looking at what possibilities we have. If there was a using a partial route and a different route, that's all, we're unable to talk about that.
Okay, Representative Holberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that we're not taking a vote on this. Certainly, this is an issue that's a topic of conversation in my community and others, and we could have had a full hearing. We could fill this place up if we wanted to go down that route. There is nothing in the current law that prohibits the city of Northfield from dusting off the 2000 study and taking another look at it on their dime as a preliminary step. And in fact, many communities have done that as a preliminary step to moving rail lines forward. So first of all, if this is such a hot issue in Northfield and something that the residents of Northfield really want, then it should be a high enough priority in their budget for them to take a little bit of money and take another look at this study that was done. It was pretty resounding in that it really wasn't too feasible as a commuter rail line, the cost of upgrading the line, etc. So I mean, I would be opposed to this. I hope that if in fact this is moved, it's moved under the hearing in which committee members can hear both sides of this issue. There's, your bill as proposed, you don't just allow for studying, you also allow for planning. And so it really goes far forward than even being able to study. So, and again, City of Northfield can do whatever they want. If this is so important, let them spend $10,000-$15,000 between now and next fall, get some preliminary numbers. They can get ridership and they can get corridor numbers as far as vehicles traveled, et cetera, where people are going. Met Council has all that demographic stuff. And then come and help convince us that it really makes sense.
Representative Bly, and then other discussion? Representative Bly, do you want to respond?
I guess I don't see why the city of Northfield should be treated differently than other communities. Or if there are plans that look at lines and funding is used for that purpose. I don't understand, I guess, why that's important to go in that direction.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because even on this committee, we have different points of view about this. Really, most of this initial conversation does take place between local communities, and some even form broader regional rail authorities. If you just think about North Star and the number of communities that work together, probably for years, it does seem to me that some of that conversation can be ongoing on the local level between entities along the corridor to see if one could get beyond the point of opposition in other communities. I mean, that it strikes me ultimately that local conversation in almost every other corridor that I know is finally what drives the corridor. So I don't know what motivation there is along the line, but I would certainly think there could be a leadership role for someone in just bringing communities together for conversation.
Representative Bly, if you want to respond, otherwise Representative Rosenthal.
I guess I'm under the assumption that those kinds of conversations can't take place under the current ban. Am I wrong in assuming that, or?
Representative Hausman?
My sense would be those conversations would be, can we reach agreement on what we would, I mean, this, it wouldn't really get into any of the words that we're talking about here. It really is that preliminary discussion about a corridor and whether local communities can come to any starting point, agreement of a starting point. And I can't see that there would be anything that, unless I'm misreading this, that would not allow that.
Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hausman. I think that's a great idea. Representative Bly, I appreciate what you're trying to do for your city. But as Representative Holberg has stated, our communities are going to be drastically affected by this. This goes through backyards of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of houses in Bloomington and Edina. And right now, the trains can't move at more than 3 miles an hour. And there's two trains a day that are allowed in this line. So there is a lot at stake. And I like Representative Hausman's idea of getting together and having the communities talk to each other.
Representative Bly, and then we'll take maybe one or two more comments.
Yes, right.
And
thank you, and thank you for your indulgence. I guess my point is that if a community can say, well, there's a ban on that line, there's no reason to talk about it. What, you know, we have interest in pursuing it, but I don't see that there's any desire or reasonable reason why a community would consider it if they have this ban that prevents you from even considering it. So I guess help me understand how we could have those conversations in a reasonable way where, you know, a community can just say, well, we don't have to talk about it because it's not going to happen.
Okay. Well, this is generating some interest, so Representative.
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, if you look at the language that's in front of us on this amendment, the prohibitions are for Met Council and MnDOT. It doesn't say Northfield. It doesn't say Dakota County. It doesn't say Hennepin County. It doesn't say Lakeville, Burnsville, Savage, Bloomington, Edina, Minneapolis, and whoever else I missed along the line. And virtually every line has come with a local initiative to us for funding. So to say that if Northfield expends some funds, that would be different than any other community, it's not. I mean, if you went to Anoka and Anoka County, the amount of local money that was spent before the state even put in one red dime, I'm sure would shock a lot of people.
Okay. Representative Hortman, and then if there's no further discussion, I'll make a couple of closing comments, and also Representative Swales wanted to make some comments as well.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bly, I think that I agree with all of Representative Holberg's points, except for Dakota County's Regional Rail Authority is precluded from study So if you were looking for participation from a county regional rail authority, that they couldn't do that under subdivision 4. But I think that the example of North Star is a good one. For example, the North Star Development Corridor Authority was put together long before Metropolitan Council spent money on North Star, and different cities and counties kind of got their ducks in a row on what they thought the plan would be and formed a joint powers board. And I think a lot of, so there's nothing in the statute that says it can't be talked about at the local government level. And I just, I worry when we have conversations here at the Capitol that something in state law prohibits a conversation, because we can't do that. That's unconstitutional, and we don't have any laws that prohibit conversation on certain topics. We may prohibit funding. We may prohibit an approval process of something at a certain point in time, but we do not prohibit conversations on certain topics, and we can't do that because of the First Amendment.
Representative,
I agree, and certainly we wouldn't be having a discussion today if we were banning conversation about it. But I guess I mean, the North Star line didn't have a ban on the line when people started talking about it. And I think my concern is that it's going to be very difficult to bring people to the table if they can rest assured that, you know, something you want to see talked about can never happen. And I guess that's the struggle that I have. I guess I can try and test it and see whether or not something can happen. But that's my assessment, is that it'd be very difficult to get people to come to the table and talk about something when there's a ban on having it happen.
Okay, good. Members, I'm going to make just a quick comment, and I'll also call on Representative Swales. But, Representative Bly, I want to thank you. I think that you make a very valid point. When you really look at the language here, it's overkill. And I think it should be removed from statute. But, to Representative Rosenthal and Representative Holbrook's points, a successful corridor happens when you have buy-in from all the communities in which it travels in. And that's why North Star succeeded, and that's why I think, Southwest Corridor, for example. I mean, there's concerns, for example, on that light rail line, but, from the get-go, we had local communities that bought into it, and that is the prerequisite for a successful line. But I do think there's a need for we have the 35W bus rapid transit. I think that's helpful, but I think there is some additional possibilities for rail transit going south towards your area. But I think that let's take some time. Let's have more discussions with the local communities. Obviously, you have a new concept here that you can feel free to have that presented any place, any time you want. But I'd love to see us really have a good conversation next year in this committee about it. I appreciate that you, really your hard work on it. I think you're right, but we have other, issues as well in terms of the local communities, and we want to keep in mind their concerns. So with that, I think, Representative Swales, did you want to make a... Okay. Well, members, then I want to... move the minutes from our last meeting, first of all. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. I have some thank yous, but I think I'll call on Representative Swales first.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is a comment for the committee, and also to thank you for your very gracious leadership of our committee this year. And I also would like the committee to be aware that in our midst we have an actor who was a part of an Academy Award nominated movie called A Serious Man. He had a major walk-on role as a person sitting in a doctor's office in this film. And I'd like to congratulate our Academy nominated actor, Chair Hornstein, for his role in that movie.
Yeah. I think it's a great movie, and you don't have to be Jewish to appreciate it. But just FYI, if you do see the movie, it's about 2 seconds. It's about a third of my face without a beard. But it was an interesting experience, and I'd be happy to talk to anyone about it at an appropriate time and place. But I appreciate, so this is our last meeting, and thank you, Representative Swales, for your leadership of the committee. We kind of went through this a little bit last week, but just to reiterate, also Representative Erdahl, you were very good with the gavel. I appreciated that last week. And we have, again, really it's the staff that deserves our really deepest appreciation. You know, we only meet once a week, but they're doing all kinds of other things in the meantime, staffing several committees. But we have Anna Ballin and Annie Kropik and Dan Kane and Corinne Zewers and Matt Burris and Susie Maher, and last but not least, Abby Breidick. And, you know, thank all of you, really, from the bottom of our hearts. This place runs because of you. And, again, thanks to all the members. We have a really good committee. I've had the pleasure of chairing this now for, you know, two bienniums, and we have a really good working relationship. I hope this committee can model some good bipartisanship. If we don't agree on everything, I think the relationships are at least really strong and really solid. And I appreciate everybody on the committee for working through that, because that's not an easy thing to do. So with that, members, on this St. Patrick's Day, the Transportation and Transit Policy and Oversight Division is adjourned for signee die for the session.